tripped in towards Lewandowski!
Magnificent from Cristiano Ronaldo!
Harry Kane, 1-0 England!
Ibrahimovic! Oh, he certainly made the most of that!
You're listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast.
Thanks for downloading the podcast. I'm Rob Daly. The semi-final lineup is complete. We have our four teams.
Right, has the shot. It is 3-0.
Vokes! Oh! I don't believe it!
Jonas Hector. And he scores!
It's Ricardo Quaresma again. He blasts Portugal through!
On the show today, we preview the semi-finals and hear from Manuel Neuer, Cristiano Ronaldo, and the Wales boss, Chris Coleman.
I know Bale knows it's not about Bale and Ronaldo. Bale knows it's Wales v Portugal.
European football journalists Tom Kell and Chris Parrott join me from Paris. Plus, we hear from Joe Walker, our reporter based with the Portugal team. Chris and Tom, we're almost there, semi-final stage. Tom, are you excited for the last four?
I'm very excited, Rob, yeah. Portugal-Wales, of course, in Lyon on Wednesday, and then France versus Germany in Marseille on Thursday. I have got those written down as per the previous podcasts. Even though there's only two, I'm still struggling to remember.
Yeah, notoriously, Tom cannot remember any of the fixtures of a tournament he's supposedly an expert about. Chris, before we get into our full preview of the semi-finals, what's been notable is that for many of the teams that have left the competition, that have been eliminated, their players have been involved in big money transfers.
Yeah, and some of them, whilst they were still here in the dying embers of their campaigns, we've had Nolito, the Spain forward, going to Manchester City. Ibrahimovic, of course, going to Manchester United. Michy Batshuayi's gone to Chelsea to join up with Courtois and Hazard, who he played with for Belgium. Gregors Krikoviak and Thomas Meunier are staying in France. They're going to Paris Saint-Germain. And then some players who are still involved, Samuel Umtiti, deal agreed to go to Barcelona from Lyon. And even before the tournament, Renato Sanchez and Mats Hummels both moving to Bayern from Benfica and Dortmund respectively. So it's always a difficult summer, I think, for club coaches because they get their players back later. But this time, in the tournament, there's been lots of money splashed.
Yeah, I mean, big names there, Chris, Ibrahimovic, Nolito, Krikoviak, but we're all waiting to see where Hal Robson-Kanu eventually ends up, because apparently a lot of clubs across Europe are looking to sign him after his wonder goal.
Well, I mean, he should be the best earning player in Welsh football history after that Cruyff turn. It's the moment of Euros for me.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we'll get on to Wales shortly. Tom, let's start by talking about France. France will take on Germany the first time the two teams have ever met at a Euro, which is quite unbelievable in itself. Both of you, in fact, were at France-Iceland, and you saw the highest scoring game of the tournament, Tom, so far.
Yeah, Chris and I were discussing it earlier, and I thought that we were a little fearful, I think, when France took such an early lead, and then obviously 4-0 at half-time, but Iceland really proved their worth in a way. I think that second half they really came out fighting and they showed what they were made of. It could have been a real hammering, I think, but they showed the organisation and the discipline in a way, I think, that they'd shown for the rest of the tournament.
Well, let's hear from one of their star players, of course, Gylfi Sigurdsson, speaking after the game.
Yeah, very disappointed. Disappointed with the first half. But I think overall France were a better team and thoroughly deserved the win. It's been a fantastic tournament. Been something special, of course, for a small team like us. But we've probably overachieved something that no one expected us to do.
And we also got one last rendition of that slow hand clap from Iceland.
It's amazing. It's the first Iceland game I've been to. Do you know what? Obviously, the patience they've got is phenomenal.
Yes.
There's like a good 10-second silence between it, and they just stay patient. I'd just start clapping too early, I think.
There was a moment, actually, in the week, this week, Chris, where me and you were trying to do it in the office.
Yeah.
Just with two humans, me and you. And you were so out of time with me trying to lead the clap.
Well, I tried to do it in the Austria game and found it really difficult. But I was speaking to some Icelandic fans, so there's a guy with an enormous drum who leads it, but he only had tickets for the group stage, went back, and then the Iceland supporters apparently paid for him to come back out for the quarterfinal against France.
No way.
Yeah, so I realised this very belatedly when I moved around the stadium to stand with the Iceland fans after the game, because they were there for about 20 minutes after full time. And I suddenly realised, if you watch him, that's the way to do it. Heaven knows how you also watch the game when it's going on, but I was just watching him and suddenly I was perfectly in tune.
What were you applauding when you were practicing in the office? Anything
we were applauding ourselves for a great day's work,
yes.
Tom.
Okay. We'll do that at the end of the podcast, shall we?
Exactly. Let's talk about France now. Of course, into the semi-finals. And they managed to win without Adil Rami and N'Golo Kanté, both suspended for the game and in the stands. Tom, what impressed you about France? Do you think it was their best display that we've seen from them so far?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the firepower that they've shown, I mean, the Golden Boot rankings is now 1-2-3 for France. Griezmann at the top, and then Giroud and Payet tied.
Yeah.
They've just got so many options, I think. And I think Deschamps, he took a fair bit of criticism, I think, early on in the tournament, but he's shown that he's really played this very well. You know, he rested Griezmann. I think he said after the game yesterday that he was tired at the start, and now he's fresh and
he looks it. Yeah,
yeah, and he's got those big players. He's got peaking at just the right time.
They were so clinical. They had 5 attempts on target in the first half, and they scored 4 goals. And then you're through. I think he's moved Griezmann centrally for the last game and a half, and he scored 4 goals in that position.
I think he's happier there, isn't he? He said as much before the game that he wanted to play that role.
And you know, and we've seen him at Atletico play that all season and be one of the informed strikers in the world. And I think the way that him and Giroud are dovetailing very, very nicely. They did it against Ireland. They did it against Iceland too. And Giroud, Tom, you mentioned that you thought at the start that having taken maybe not being the most loved French striker, Olivier Giroud, all of a sudden last night when he was substituted to keep him fresh for the semi-final, standing ovation, because he was absolutely outstanding.
I think, Chris, I described / predicted it as a slow-burning love affair.
You did.
And that is quite accurate, I think.
Yes, and that, of course, will be part of the synopsis of your first novel, Tom, as well. Let's talk about France's defending, though, Tom. Of course, they were without Rami, and Titi came in, but susceptible from, it seems, set pieces and wide areas given the nature of the goals they conceded.
Yeah, there were some phenomenal stats going around early on in the tournament. Something like half the goals conceded under Deschamps have been from set plays, I think. Something around that figure anyway.
So there's definitely an area to get at them.
Yeah, certainly. But I also read this morning that they've scored more headers than anyone else as well. So they're obviously good at the other end at set pieces as well. So yeah, I think, you know, Germany they'll obviously target that, but without Mario Gomez, that's an obvious aerial threat. Maybe they'll be, you know, less of a threat than they'd have liked.
Let's hear from the scorer of two of France's goals, Olivier Giroud.
We are very satisfied with our night. We scored 5 times. The only slight sour note was that we conceded 2 goals, but we won't deny we are very happy with our performance tonight. There are a lot of good things.
Olivier Giroud, one of the star men for France in their quarter-final win. But Chris, having seen France in the flesh now as well in that game against Iceland, I think both of you have mentioned you're starting to realise the importance of Laurent Koscielny.
Yeah, another who came off to a rapturous applause. They were singing his name. He has been outstanding this competition, but you saw when he went off, they looked far more susceptible at the back to Iceland. I think he's a huge player. Adil Rami was a surprise. I mean, Raphael Varane would have been first choice out of the tournament. It would have been him and Koscielny. He's played with Umtiti. He had to move from the left to the right. He was brilliant. And I think it's a big decision now for Deschamps ahead of the Germany game. Does he bring back Rami? Does he bring back Kanté? Because they were more attacking last night and they were absolutely brilliant going forward. So does he play a slightly more attacking game against Germany and hope that Matuidi and Pogba can supply that protection to the back four without Kanté? It's a decision he's got to make, and it'll be fascinating to see which way he goes.
Yeah, absolutely is. And I think part of the problem is that Kanté may be out of the central midfielders before yesterday had been France's best central midfielder.
Yeah.
And you've got Coman to come back from... he did come on, I think, didn't he? But he wasn't fully fit to start.
Yeah, I mean, Kante's been excellent, but he plays the Kanté role. I mean, we might be coining that phrase, but it's how Makélélé played. So he has been excellent, but he's never going to offer you the type of attacking vigour from that position that someone else might certainly that France had in that game. So it's whether he...
But Germany are a different attacking prospect to Iceland.
Yeah, they are, which, and I think Kante will probably come back in. But he certainly got selection problems, because when you beat someone 5-2 in a quarter final, a lot of players will have put their hand up to start where they might not have done had they won just 1 or 2-0.
Very true. Okay, Tom, what do you reckon to the team selection dilemma for Didier Deschamps?
It is a totally different proposition, isn't it, facing Germany. I would expect Kante to come back, certainly. I think they need that little bit of solidity in midfield, in front of the back four. Koscielny is increasingly important. I really, really believe that. The way he brings the ball out from defence as well, not just the way he actually defends, the way he brings the ball out is really key to getting them going, I think. I'd expect Kante to come back in. Other than that, I'm not sure whether he'll change the back four. I think they were solid enough yesterday. It's difficult to judge, really, I think, against Iceland. Mm. Even though Iceland came back into it, they're just not the same proposition that Germany will be. And the way Germany, they were so fluid against Slovakia. And then in the quarterfinals, they weren't quite as much of a threat, but...
Against the best defence in the world, potentially, in Italy.
Yeah, absolutely. And they'll offer more, certainly, and there'll be more options that France have to sort of contend with. So, yeah, I think Kante's a must.
Let's turn our attention now to Germany.
Follow UEFA Euro 2016 on the go.
Not convincingly cleared, and there's Müller. Wouldn't you just know it?
It is Bale. It's a second for Wales.
Download the official app now.
So Germany will play France in the semi-finals of UEFA Euro 2016. Germany threw after a win on penalties against Italy. And Jogi Löw said after himself, Tom, the Germany head coach, that it was a strange game overall, including the penalty shootout.
It was. It was very tentative in parts, I thought. And the penalties were amazing. The scenes in the office during those penalties, for those of us that weren't at the game, were phenomenal. I loved it. I have to say, I loved it.
We had German journalists in the office. We had Italian journalists in the office. It was going crazy in there.
Yeah, I mean, I was stood up for the whole of penalties. I didn't look at my laptop. It was phenomenal.
So, of course, it was a bizarre shootout in the end. And one of the Cologne-based newspapers called it an XXL shootout, which I think is quite a good way to put it, because we had 19 kicks in the end, Tom. We've not had more penalties than that in a shootout previously at Euro. And some notable misses as well throughout the course of that shootout.
Yeah, there were some very funky penalties, let's say. That run-up from, was it Zaza?
Yes.
Our reporter who was at the game actually said when he was there, he had time during that run-up to turn to both the Germany and the Italy reporter during the run-up to comment on the run-up. That's how long it took.
So lots of scored and missed penalties in the shootout. Let's remind ourselves of how the kicks ended.
5-5, Matteo Darmian. And Neuer saves! Advantage, Germany again. Jonas Hector of Cologne with the chance to put Germany into the semi-final. And he scores!
It was pure drama. I can't put it any other way. So many penalty takers. I've never experienced anything like it. I think we'll always remember this. For me as a goalkeeper, it was extra special.
Manuel Neuer there speaking after the game. He was man of the match in the end for his shootout heroics. Jonas Hector, as you heard, got the winner. But Chris, Gigi Buffon actually almost saved that one as well.
Could have gone on further because Buffon guessed the right way. He was ever so close to getting it. Wasn't the best penalty. But hey, even when Germany take bad penalties, they still win a shootout. I mean, it was a bonkers shootout because when it got to sudden death, those that weren't supposed to take penalties were tucking them away left, right and centre. And actually, it was the first five from both countries, including that one from Schweinsteiger when he could have won it. But ultimately, they did enough, Germany, and they're through. And they've probably beaten, well, France will argue differently after that Iceland win. But going into the quarterfinals, Germany have probably beaten what they would consider the hardest opponent that they might have to face.
Yeah, very true. So let's talk about Italy for a moment before we finalise our preview of France-Germany. First, let's hear from Antonio Conte, of course, on his way to take charge of Chelsea. Here are his thoughts post-match on his legacy as Italy head coach.
I am proud of our journey and of what we achieved. I am proud of the legacy we are leaving for the future. We wanted to convey to our fans a feeling of enthusiasm, an emotional attachment to this team and this shirt. I think we managed to do that when we defeated Spain, even though this match against Germany ended up with a loss.
Di aver eliminato dopo la Spagna anche la Germania. Antonio Conte there, Giampiero Ventura replaces him as Italy head coach for the FIFA World Cup qualifiers, and Leonardo Bonucci said after the game that Conte made Italy fashionable again. And there's certainly, Tom, going into the tournament, there were doubts about what the Azzurri could accomplish, particularly given the perhaps the lack of firepower on paper in that team.
Yeah, I mean, being fashionable is not something that Italians normally struggle with, is it? But I think in a way they had a lot of the hallmarks of traditional Italian teams. You know, they were brilliant defensively, very intense, the coach more so than anyone, kicking every ball almost literally in that
there
round
was
16
one point,
game.
Yeah.
But they also, they're just very Italian, very solid, very intense, very good at the back, very tactical. I think that the two up top really paid off for them. I think that was quite key, which is quite rare at this tournament. I think there's not many teams that have played two up top.
No, and the teams that are doing it are actually enjoying a bit of success. I mean, you look at France are now playing effectively Giroud and Griezmann in attack.
That thing about being Conte on the touchline, I also think that is becoming not just fashionable but in vogue now, that coaches, the most successful ones, are guys who are almost orchestrating things. You look at Simeone. Even Zidane, actually, is pretty intense on the touchline.
Klopp.
Conte, Klopp. It's no longer the guys who are sitting back and watching and setting them up superbly tactically and, you know, let them get on with it. It's actually the guys who are there screaming and shouting, and that seems to be the way that maybe coaching, or certainly the top coaches, are going.
So how is Joachim Löw going to set up his team, Chris, for the semi-final? Because, I mean, they've got a lot of players out already.
Yeah, three of their starting 11 are out. Hummels, Khedira and Gomez. Khedira and Gomez are injured. Hummels is suspended. Benedikt Höwedes, Löw has pretty much admitted he'll come in to fill in for Hummels. But beyond that, probably Weigl or Chan will come in for Khedira. And up front is maybe his biggest selection dilemma. He could start with Goetze, who started the tournament, but then Gomez came in for him. Or he could maybe bring in Draxler and play Thomas Müller through the middle. So they've got, whereas France have got a clean bill of health, none of their yellow carded players got suspended, no injuries. Germany and their manager are going to have to make some big changes.
So what would you do? Who would you play in attack? Would you go with Müller?
I would,
through the middle.
Yeah, I'd go with Müller. I think he probably will go with Goetze because, you know, he's talked about how in the World Cup that's ultimately how they won it. They know about beating the hosts. Thumped Brazil, didn't they, in front of their own supporters. I think they'll be confident of doing the same to France, but I think it will be Mario Goetze. I wonder if it should be Thomas Müller.
Tom, what do you reckon? What would you do? Because, I mean, you mentioned Mario Gomez at the start of the tournament, and even in the build-up to the goal against Italy, he was vital. He suddenly turned into a big loss for the national team.
I think he's a perfect focal point for those players behind who, I think we discussed it in the previous podcast, actually, that their movement, they're very, very fluid. There is no right-sided player, central player, left-sided player. Those three just sort of move around behind Gomez. And if Goetze is up front, I know the theory of the false nine.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure it's going to work as well. And so I agree with Chris. I absolutely would have Müller up front and bring back Draxler.
Okay, let's look at the other semi-final now. Portugal will face Wales. Cristiano Ronaldo set to come up against Gareth Bale, his Real Madrid teammate. More on Wales in a moment. But first, let's hear from Ronaldo on Portugal's penalty shootout win over Poland.
It
was a very difficult match. A fitting quarter-final, really. Poland did well. They've got a strong team and they play good football. They're very intense, they're physical and experienced as well. But I think that Portugal were the better side. We created the more chances. Today, we're the winners. Penalties are always a lottery, but Portugal took their penalties better and we were worthy winners.
Ronaldo there. Okay, let's hear from UEFA.com's reporter based with the Portugal team throughout the tournament, Joe Walker.
For the latest news from inside the team camps, go to Euro2016.com.
Joe, thanks for joining us on the podcast. Can you tell us, I know you've been watching training today. How are the Portugal squad looking?
Obviously the spirit is very good in the squad. It's only natural that it is, given the circumstances in which they've won their last two games. They're sort of riding crest of a wave at the moment. The squad itself is doing well. 22 of the 23 players trained as normal today, so that means that André Gomes and João Moutinho were back in full training. Only Rafael Guerreiro, the left-back, did some fitness work separately. However, Fernando Santos did say in his press conference that he expects him to be back as per normal tomorrow.
When I was chatting to you the other day, you were mentioning the fact that there's loads of fans, Portugal fans, based around the training camp.
Yeah, it's amazing. The support that Portugal have received here is incredible. Obviously, France is home to the world's largest Portuguese diaspora, which helps. There's well over a million Portuguese people of some extraction or another living in France, and the support they've received is just incredible. After the Croatia win, there was at least 500 of them waiting in Marcoussi at 4 a.m. despite the pouring rain to welcome the coach back. And I know the same thing happened again after the victory over Poland. So it's just been incredible. And today at training, you know, the TV cameras were there. There was at least a couple of hundred people lining the streets. They actually at one point had to close the streets off to cars because there was just more people, no room for cars to get past. So the police actually closed the street off, and there were a couple of guys with loudspeakers as well, sort of leading the chants on. It was great.
Joe, how strange has it been to see Portugal reach the semi-finals without actually winning a game in 90 minutes?
Yeah, it's quite a strange situation to be in, really, because you kind of feel Portugal haven't actually got going as of yet. They drew all three of their group games to get through as one of the best third-place sides, and obviously they've drawn after 90 minutes in both of their knockout ties, so it is quite strange. Portugal, as you said, it's their fourth semi-final in the last 5 Euros. They're quite often the bridesmaid rather than the bride in Euro, and I think that needs to change. They need to click into gear, because as we saw with Wales' performance against Belgium, Wales are absolutely on fire. They're playing brilliantly. Obviously they're going to be without Aaron Ramsey, which is a big loss. However, Portugal aren't going to take that for granted, and I think there's an acceptance within the camp that, you know, they're going to have to play the best game that they've played so far at the tournament if they are to get past Wales and into the final.
And in essence, Joe, two match winners for Ricardo Quaresma in the round of 16, and he got the winning penalty in the shootout against Poland. What a story this is turning into.
Yeah, well, Ricardo Quaresma was this enigma, isn't he? He was the future of Portuguese football, along with Cristiano Ronaldo, sort of 12, 13 years ago, that these two kids coming through the Sporting Academy in Lisbon. And it was actually thought that Quaresma was the better one of the two. However, their careers have obviously taken separate paths. Quaresma's been a bit of a journeyman, whereas Ronaldo has collected title after title after title and individual accolades as well. So Ricardo Quaresma, he's someone who divides opinion, but in Portugal he's loved. He's one of the key players in and around the camp, even if he's not contributing sort of consistently on the pitch, because he's started most games as a sub and come off the bench, as you said, but to great effect. He's good for team morale. He's one of Cristiano Ronaldo's best friends as well. They grew up together. They have little nicknames for each other. They always come out to warm up together. And even today, you know, they were just playing keepy up, so like kids on the street when they came out. So Chris was a very important part of the squad, if not an integral part of the first team.
After his goal and massive performance against Poland, Joe, do you think Renato Sanches is a starter for Portugal?
He's now seen as the future. He is, you know, he was anyway at the start of the tournament. There was a lot of people who raised a few eyebrows that Fernando Santos didn't start him in any of the group games. He was often the go-to guy from the bench, brought on to add a bit of impetus from the midfield that Portugal were really lacking. And now Renato Sanches now seems as indispensable to this 11 as Cristiano Ronaldo. And it's mad to say that about someone who only started his first game for Portugal against Poland in the quarterfinals. However, he is now the main man. He's going to play central midfield for Portugal for the next 10, 15 years. And Bayern Munich look to have got themselves a bargain.
And were you surprised? He nominated himself, I saw he said after, for the second penalty after Ronaldo in the shootout against Poland. Does that level of confidence surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me, just because when you actually observe Renato Sanches on a day-to-day basis, you see just like he's a terrier. He, you know, he doesn't shirk any tackles in training, even if it's against, you know, the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo and co. He'll go in full-blooded. He trains like he plays the matches, which is, you know, a million miles an hour, gives 110%. And his confidence and the way he carries himself in and around the camp, it doesn't surprise me that he nominated himself for the penalty. He was obviously voted the man of the match, awarded that, and he fully deserved it. He scored a great goal and his confidence was high. And I wouldn't be surprised if he puts himself forward again should it go all the way against Wales.
Okay, so the Wales game next. Joe, how do you see them? How do you see them getting on?
Having watched all of Portugal's games thus far at Euro 2016, I can safely say it's going to be a cagey affair. Probably not too high scoring, although there was the one anomaly, which was the game against Hungary. So I think it's going to be quite a cagey affair. Sort of like two boxers sizing each other up, ready to land the killer blow. There's been a lot of talk, you know, even in the past sort of 24 hours about how it's going to be Cristiano Ronaldo versus Gareth Bale. But I don't think that is the only thing. You know, Wales have shown that they are far more than a one-man team. Fernando Santos himself said, you know, Wales are the epitome of a team. And that's very true. They've shown that they've got the great collective spirit. However, Portugal are showing the same thing. I think it's going to be a very close game. But I think that maybe Portugal's experience at this level might just see them over the line.
For the best coverage and the latest news, follow the @UEFAEuro account on Twitter.
And a big thanks to Joe for coming on the podcast. So Portugal, Tom, take on Wales. What an accomplishment from Wales to reach their first ever semi-final of a major tournament.
Yeah, I mean, phenomenal. And the newspaper in Wales, the Western Mail, rightly so, I think, gave every player 10 out of 10. For that performance.
Oh, in their ratings.
Yeah. Which is in stark contrast to L'Equipe in France, which, as we've discussed before, is a little harsh, I think. I think it was sixes and sevens for Wales.
Yeah.
And the Times in England, of course, gave zero to every England player after that Iceland defeat.
It's worth noting as well, I mean, we were talking about Renato Sanches earlier. He still got given a six for his brilliant performance against Poland the other day. It's hard to pick out standout performers, Tom, from Wales. It's astonishing whenever Belgium. But a lot of the talk has been about Hal Robson-Kanu because he has scored one of the best goals of the tournament.
The Robson-Kanu turn, I think it's now called, isn't
it? Yes, the RKT.
Yes, I think I've watched that 236 times now, and I plan to do so many more times today as well. I love it. The goal was phenomenal, but the performance, in all seriousness, was just everything that this Wales side are. They were so unexpectedly unflustered, I think, against a Belgium side that had absolutely decimated Hungary, and we thought that they were peaking. All that attacking talent was starting to sort of form into.
Well, we saw in the first 25 minutes, didn't we? The Wales were under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, but they stood firm mostly. I can't remember a team that has done so perfectly, got the best out of what they've got. Ramsey and Bale undoubtedly are the two most talented players, perhaps. And that team just is set up perfectly to get the best out of them. The defence as a unit are unbelievable. And I think Chris Coleman just deserves an enormous amount of credit.
Let's remind ourselves of how Wales got that win over Belgium.
Hazard. Now England, time to shoot. Oh, what a goal! That's out of this world. It just flew into the top of that Wales goal. And he spins away. Ashley Williams for Wales! Glory moment for the big giant of a Welsh captain. Now Ramsey, Robson-Kanu, he's got Taylor. Robson-Kanu! Incredible! Wales are reaching new heights in France. Vokes in the middle. Vokes! Oh! I don't believe it! And Belgium are battered!
Perhaps the greatest night in Welsh footballing history. Let's hear from one of their star midfielders, the Welsh Pirlo himself, Joe Allen.
Truth be told, we knew we were going to score tonight. And as soon as we did get level, to be honest, everyone was fully confident that we could go on and win the game. And, of course, it took absolutely everything, as you'd expect, quality team like them. But this is what this team's all about. We never, never give up. And it's going to take something special to stop us, I think.
Joe Allen has, of course, Chris, been one of Wales' star performers. And you can hear it in his voice almost there, how excited he is.
Oh, he's been absolutely brilliant. And also, I mean, given it's such a long time since they're at a major tournament, I think you forget that, given how well they've done. They came into this tournament, and I think the last player to score against them was Pele when he was 17. You know, that's how long it's been. But they, to come back to what Tom said, they have just, the way they've taken to international football at the highest level, having never played here, any of these players, has been remarkable. They didn't panic when they fell behind, and they were worthy winners. And the one problem they have is that they lost two of their key men for suspension, Ramsey and Ben Davis, and replacing those really will be a test of their team strength and exactly what Chris Coleman will do, because they are two, I think, of their maybe three or four most important players.
You're not happy with the Welsh Pillow nickname, Chris?
No.
What's wrong?
Well, he was first dubbed the Welsh Chavvy, infamously by Brendan Rodgers. So whether he's now become the Welsh Pillow, but it was definitely Chavvy first. And now, probably because of his long hair and his beard, it's now Pirlo. I just want accuracy on this podcast, that's all.
Chris was quite annoyed about that, wasn't he?
Chris was really upset.
Why don't we just call him Joe Allen?
The Welsh that's Joe right. Allen is what we'll go with. Obviously, lots of components to the team. One of them that we'll be missing, Tom, is Aaron Ramsey, suspended for the semi-final. He made 7 crosses, won 3 corners, completed 49 of his 57 passes, and 2 assists as well. He's a big loss, isn't he?
Was that all off the top of your head, Rob?
Did you see me looking down at my screen at the
time?
Yeah,
I've seen those notes. Yeah, he's a massive loss. I think behind, obviously, Gareth Bale, he is the biggest loss. I think perhaps, though, the way it's being hyped up, we could just forget about the other 10 players on each team and just let Bale and Ronaldo take on each other. I'd like to see that.
Well, just a one-on-one game.
Yeah, just one-on-one. It would be high-scoring, but it would be fun.
Well, it's so funny you mention this, because this is the very question that was put to Wales head coach Chris Coleman by our reporter Mark Pittman.
Can't control that, the Bale Ronaldo theme. You know, that's going to be talked about, but it's not about them, you know. And I know Bale knows it's not about Bale and Ronaldo. Bale knows it's Wales v Portugal. He'll be doing what he's always done for us. He's all about the team. He has got the huge respect from the players, because we know he's a great player, it's obvious. He won't play any differently, Bale, that's how he is.
You're making history. This is a dream that's becoming very real. How do you feel and sum up your emotions at this moment in time?
Numb, if I'm honest with you, I think, because if we stop and think too much about what we've done because of the emotion involved, then you lose sight of where you're trying to get to. And I know that's dangerous. I know from experience that's dangerous. So for me, it's never enough what we've done. I always want a bit more. You never saw live when you're actually in the middle of the battle. And that's when everything's up for grabs, when it can go either way. You don't know what's going to happen. It's scary. It's tense. Loads of pressure. And it's fantastic all at the same time. So I know that's coming Wednesday night again. I'm looking forward to it, because I believe in the players, I believe in the team. I know they're good, and I just want them to go and show again how good they are.
Wales head coach Chris Coleman. Chris, he's impressed a lot of people at this tournament, hasn't he, with what he's done with that team?
Phenomenally. I mean, semi-finalist, and I think tactically they've been set up perfectly. They've played different styles. It's amazing to think that the one game they lost was against England, but they've defended. They've then shown that they can also attack teams very well. I think Russia and Belgium, that was the case. But he's got, you know, just to come back to Ramsey, who I think Ramsey would be in my team of the tournament. I think he's been outstanding. It will probably be Andy King or Johnny Williams to replace him. Now, I think it's a big decision. Andy King is now a Premier League winner, of course, but that would be the more conservative option. I think Johnny Williams would be... He's more of an attacker in that midfield. And Ben Davis as well. You'd think James Collins comes in. I think Ben Davis is a big miss, because they've played those three centre-backs perfectly. And Ben Davis is naturally left-footed, natural left-sider. And they're going to have to bring in Collins, who won't be as used to that role.
Very good point.
And I think Chester, Williams and Davis have been not quite as good as Bonucci, Chiellini and Barzagli, but similar. And to to have to replace one of those will be a big test for Collins if it is him that comes in.
We keep talking about their defence, and I'm as guilty as anyone, but they've not done they've not been just resolute and that's all. They've had, I noticed yesterday, they've had average 47% possession, which obviously isn't phenomenal, but it's not a clinging on for dear life stat.
They're not just conceding the ball to the team.
No, and they've scored 10 goals, I think, which may even be before France. I think it might be second only to France. I'm not certain. So yeah, I mean, it's not just the defence. They are a very, very capable side.
Tom, for Belgium, the tournament comes to an early end in a sense. I think you know, a lot of people are expecting them to do a lot better than a quarterfinal exit.
Yeah, Mark Wilmot said as much himself after the game. He said he admitted that they were the favourites and they obviously hoped to go further, and I think they expected to go further. But Wilmot's, I think, pertinently also said, I think the quote was, "I'm not a magician, you can't replace experience." And that is, I think, been overlooked somewhat. He was without company Lombards for the whole tournament. And then Vertonghen got injured before the quarterfinal, and also Vermaelen was suspended. And they are four excellent defenders, and there's an awful lot of experience in there. That is very hard to replace.
For the first 20 minutes, you know, Belgium could have been 2 or 3 nil up. They were bossing the game. They were looking like the team that had dismantled Hungary. Then they seemed to slightly panic when Wales equalised, and then to bring on Fellaini, I didn't have a problem with that necessarily. I think, you know, Wales had scored from a set piece. Fellaini is one of the best, certainly in European football, I think, at defending set pieces, which is often overlooked. But he also kept on Nainggolan and Witsel, and they went back to those three big central midfielders that had played against Italy when it didn't work, right back on match day one. And maybe whether he should have taken off, the argument is that he could have taken off one of those for Fellaini and dropped him back and kept those attacking players behind Lukaku. Because as I think we've seen with Manchester United, sometimes there's a temptation when Fellaini's on the pitch, because he's so good aerially, to bypass some of your more creative players. And that certainly happened. And I think that played into Wales' hands, because the likes of Chester, Williams and Davis, that's their bread and butter. They're okay with that. If they could have tried to play through Wales a bit more, they might have got more joy. But I think tactically, Wales would have been happy when Fellaini came on. And not that he played especially badly, but it changed the way Belgium played.
So let's have our predictions for the final. Tom, who do you think's getting there?
I'm just thinking about Welsh bread and butter now, since Chris said it. Who do I think is going to get there, Rob? I think Wales are going to run out of steam, and Portugal will prove too good. And I think Germany will beat France.
So a Germany-Portugal final.
That's right.
Tom Kell. Chris?
I got the last one spectacularly wrong, because I said it would be Poland-Belgium in the semi-final. I think Portugal will beat Wales, because I think Davis and Ramsey are two bigger blows. I think France will beat Germany. So I think it's going to be France-Portugal.
Guys, thank you very much. And we'll be back for a preview podcast for the final.
Thanks for listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.